Hey, I'm your host, Mari Wagner, and you're listening to the Ever Be Podcast, where faith meets lifestyle. I'm so excited you're here. Whether you're a new listener or a longtime follower, I know there's something here for you. Pull up a chair and listen in for insightful, real-life conversations and actionable steps on how to claim the full life God created you for. If you're a woman desiring to live a Christ-centered life in today's modern world, then this is for you. Welcome to Ever Be. Welcome back to Ever Be Podcast, everybody. Today, we have Emily Chapman on the podcast. She is a hosting and a cooking queen, and she just came out with so many books around this. So I'm really excited to have you on. Welcome, Emily.
Oh, it's great to be here, Mari.
Okay, before we kick it off, let's do our Ever Be Moments segment together. I always love when I get to do this with a guest because I love to hear how God's working in other people's lives. So, Emily, do you have an Ever Be moment for the week?
Yeah, so I have been stressing a little bit lately about what project is next for me. I know it sounds silly, but I've been working so hard to get these three books that we just are launching.
Yeah.
The world, and I cleared my calendar for the fall to be able to prep the books. And for the first time in like 4 years, I don't have these looming projects ahead of me. And it's been making me really anxious. I'm like, oh my gosh, what am I doing? What am I doing? I don't know. And this past week, I went down to Florida for the Good News Conference to be on a panel about the story Bible that just came out, the story of all stories. And it was very fun. Jonathan Rumi was there and he does the audio version for the story Bible. And he had asked me to come back to the green room before his talk because he wanted me to sign his Bible. And so I was laughing about how Jesus climbing to sign his Bible. So I'm like, how many people are going to say Jesus asked them to sign their Bible? Yeah. But in that act, like in going back and meeting him and signing it, I was like, you know what? This is the biggest and best project I've ever done. And I didn't come up with the idea. I didn't seek it out. Like, I was approached to do it. I said no to it twice because I didn't feel like I was up to it, and they kept persisting. And look how God took care of me in that. Like, I didn't know that I needed to do this, but he did. And so just the peace that I felt, being like, okay, God knows what's next. I don't have to come up with the next best thing and the new idea and be always hustling to take care of it. Like, the Lord has a plan and I need to let him present it to me. And so lots of peace came from just realizing he's got this and it's good.
Those moments of recognizing God's got it. God's in control. Like, God is God and I am not. And that just brings us so much peace.
Yeah. I mean, I'm a choleric redhead. So, you know, my modus operandi is always, I gotta do it. I gotta be in control. I've got to take care of it.
Yes.
With a good little gentle reminder that
we sound very similar, Emily. As so many of the things that you're saying, I'm like, oh, that's me. Oh, that's me. That's so funny. Well, my Ever Be moment was just yesterday. We were traveling for a week and came home and we're just getting ready for the week. And so we went to Adoration first thing in the morning yesterday just to kick off the week. And I feel like whenever you take a break from prayer, you're traveling, you kind of get out of your routine. It's always kind of hard to like settle back in. And so I'm like sitting in front of the Eucharist and I'm just like trying to focus. And I'm like, okay, like my husband, he went on a silent retreat recently. And his big takeaway was that prayer is an opportunity to receive God's love more than it is to prove your love to God. And so I was sitting there like, okay, Lord, like, I'm just, you know, going to let you love me and thank you for your love. But it just wasn't hitting. And I just kept like getting distracted. And I was like, okay, I'm just going to open up a new spiritual book that I had brought. I Believe in Love, which so many people have raved about to me. And I just haven't sat down to read it. And the first chapter, I think, is called like God is Love or He is Love or something like that. And the whole chapter is about how God is love and how God loves us. And I just thought that was a beautiful God moment. The Lord was just confirming like, yes, you're here to receive my love. Like, you don't have to do anything. Just reflect on my love and let me love you and you just receive it. So I just thought that was a beautiful moment in prayer.
That's awesome.
Awesome. Okay. Let's hop into our conversation.
All right.
Can you share a little bit about who you are, what you're doing? I know you're a great author, speaker, all the things. So share a little bit about who you are.
Yeah, so I am a wife. I am a mom to three little kids, 7, 5, and 4. And I'm a writer, and I've been a writer a lot longer than I've been a wife or a mom. I was single longer than I planned to be single or wanted to be single. So I spent a lot of years writing. And during that time, because I did not have the husband and babies that I would have liked to have had, I looked for ways that I could love other people and I could love my friends and love their children and really create. I didn't want to wait to create a home until the husband came along. Like, I wanted to create a home and welcome people and love people. And so I did a whole heck of a lot of hosting. And so now that I do have the husband and the babies and a little bit of time, I wrote what I'm calling, it's like a handbook for hospitality. It's called Around the Catherine Table. And it is filled with 100 different recipes that are great to use for hosting. They feed a crowd. There's lots of plots that are allergen friendly. And then there's essays on spirituality, hospitality, and the practical aspects. But yeah, I'm mostly a Catholic writer who does theology, but this time I got to write a book about hosting.
That's so fun. I love that. And I so relate to your experience of like being in a waiting, but also just not wanting to wait till you reach a certain vocation to really like live your life or invite people into your home or create a space where you can create kind of a sense of family in a sense, even if it's not with direct family. So I really admire that about you. Now, tell me, have you always loved to host, or did somebody teach you or model that for you? Is it something that just came naturally, or how did you really get into hosting?
So I grew up in a family that they weren't like hosting all the time, but my parents both lived in the same town that they grew up in. Most of their family members were there. Their parents were there, brothers and sisters, all of their good friends who they've been friends with since they were five. And so I grew up in a culture of just easy hospitality where not just holidays, but Fridays or Saturdays, we would go to one of my parents' best friend's house and we would play with the kids while the adults hung out. And it was never fussy. It wasn't fancy. It was just an open door. People would stop by in the middle of the week and, you might have coffee with them, or you might decide, hey, why don't you guys stay for dinner? Call your husband, have him come here after work instead. So I grew up in that culture, and that is what I just wanted to continue in my life once I was on my own and having to build my own community far away from friends and family. I mean, I left for college when I was 18. I never went back to live. And so I knew the burden was on me to create community wherever I went. And I just did what my parents did, and it worked out.
I love that. That's really beautiful. Did your mom teach you how to cook? Like writing a cookbook is no easy thing. And so I'm wondering, like, who taught you how to cook and what really made you want to write a cookbook?
Yeah, no, my mom never taught me how to cook. I mean, other than leaving like a recipe for chili and saying, dump these things in the pot. Could you do that? I would say it was two things. When I was 19, I began struggling with anorexia. I struggled with an eating disorder for about 6 years. And I would look at a lot of cookbooks because I wasn't eating. It wasn't a really healthy thing. But it's not an uncommon thing for anorexics to do. It's like virtual eating, vicarious. So I was fascinated by cookbooks. But then when I was 24, I did a year of 23. Somewhere in there, I did a year of helping run a retreat center, and it was a really fancy retreat center. So families would come, but so would members of Congress and leaders of nations. Like it was sort of an exclusive DC insider Christian retreat center. And I got to study under chefs who were running the kitchen. And so during the weekends when we had big events, chefs would come in. And I would get to cook with them. And during the week, I would put into practice what I had learned. So I learned a lot of tricks then. And at that point, I just enjoyed cooking. So I would learn as you go. I am a home chef. I am not a trained chef, just somebody who has gotten to work with some great chefs and learned a lot from them and has figured the rest out on her own.
That's so cool. I love hearing that backstory. My mom says, that there's special people in the world who just really love to cook, and they have that chip, and others that don't. My mom always made fresh, like home cooked meals for all of us, but it's not something she like loved to do. And on the other hand, I love to cook. I love learning to cook new things. I love trying new recipes. And she's always like, where did you get that from? Like, some people just have it. Some people just don't. And so
Yeah, no, my mom was not like she hosts. She cooked because she had to. And yes. I like having people over. But yep. definitely once I sort of came into my own, I took over the cooking for most everything.
Yeah.
Like my sisters really resent that I don't live back in Illinois with the rest of the family because they're like, why do we have to host holidays? You would do it all. And I'm like,
that, yeah, I so relate to that. That's kind of how my family is too. Okay, I know that cooking is an obstacle for a lot of people to host. I think there's a bit of an intimidation factor. People, you know, don't know what to make or fear of not being good enough in the kitchen. What would you say to somebody who has these fears?
Well, I mean, the most important thing to realize, it's not about the food. It's about you. Like, it's about your love, your attention, your welcoming. I have had wonderful dinners at people's houses where the food was not memorable, but the conversation was, and the love that they showed me was. And so just getting past the idea that you're there to impress somebody with your culinary skills. Like, that's not why you invite someone over to your house. You invite them over to love them. You invite them over to get to know them and to be known yourself and build community. So take off the pressure that you have to be Martha Stewart. And then say, keep it simple. Like, if you're really intimidated about having, order pizza. Be like, come on over and join us for pizza on Friday night. Make a pot of soup. Soup is one of those things that's really hard to screw up. I love soup because it goes a long way. It's super budget friendly. Soup and bread is a great weeknight meal, cozy Saturday meal. Just keep it simple. Don't try something new necessarily if you are not the most competent cook. Even if you are, you don't want to be focused on the recipe. You want to be able to focus on your guests and be in the right space to welcome people. So simplicity, it is fun every once in a while to do something fancy. I do like to do that. But if you are not someone who likes to do that, don't feel like you're going to be a lesser hostess because of it. Just lean into the simplicity and keep the focus on the person.
Yeah. I think it's encouraging to hear you say that, right? Somebody who loves to go the extra mile and loves to host and do that can also say, like, that's not actually what it's about. And I love, even in your, like, forward in your cookbook, I believe it was, that you were making a distinction between, like, entertaining and hospitality, and kind of what you said of, like, you're not hosting with the end goal of impressing, but with the end goal of, like, really loving on the people that you're welcoming into your home. So can you unpack that distinction a little bit for us? Like, what is the shift in your heart when our goal moves from impressing to really just welcoming and loving?
Yeah. So entertaining is one of those things that it can be fun to do. Like, it is, if you do it with the right spirit and you really enjoy it, and it's not the only thing you do. You know, like, if you're only ever throwing fancy dinner parties, you're not really building community, which is built in the messy and the imperfect. Yep. And oh my gosh, my life has been nuts, but hey, why don't you stay for dinner? So as long as entertaining can be fun, but at its most basic, entertaining is often about impressing people, especially the way it's presented in this culture. Like, you're going to put on this empty dinner. It's going to be this beautiful tablescape. We're going to, you know, I'm going to show you how together I have it or how fabulous I am. And that's not necessarily what people who are entertaining are thinking, but that is how people, that's how it looks when you're looking at Pinterest or Instagram or TikTok. And that's what you can feel like you have to do too. You're like, oh gosh, I'm not that impressive. I don't know how to do that kind of tablescape. Nobody's going to want to come because I won't be able to impress them. Or they're going to come and they're going to realize what a mess I am. So I'm just not going to do it. So that kind of entertaining mindset is very limiting. And it's about us. Like, it becomes about us and impressing people and putting on a show. And we think we can't do it if we don't think we're capable of impressing people or putting on a good enough show. Mm-hmm. Hospitality is for everybody. You know, so entertaining is for the few who really enjoy it. Hospitality is for everyone. It is about loving people. It is about welcoming people. It's not about you at all, other than you being kind and welcoming. And it really is one of the things the Lord, we are commanded to practice hospitality in the New Testament. It is not an option. Like, widows weren't going to get any assistance if they hadn't practiced hospitality. Mm. A man could never be ordained a bishop if he and his family had not practiced hospitality. It's stated as a commandment, like, you contribute to the needs of the church, you practice hospitality. It is a core part of how we proclaim the gospel and live the gospel. And so, especially for us, you know, to get past our fears of, I have to be the perfect hostess, I have to be an amazing cook, and just be like, no, the Lord wants me to welcome people into my home and my life and practice real communion with others. And so I'm going to do that. even if my house is a mess and my children are crazy, or I'm a single woman and most of the people I know are married people, I'm going to invite them over to my house and love them where they are and where I am. And so it's a different mind shift. It's really, it's all about loving people, whereas entertaining often becomes about impressing people.
Yeah, I think that makes a lot of sense. And I think once we're able to kind of shed that pressure that we often just put on ourselves of like false expectations that no one else is putting on us to live up to, it takes a lot of that pressure off. And I think there's fun in both, right? Like I am definitely one of the people that loves to entertain and host a fancy dinner party, but as well as someone that's just after mass, like, hey, come over for a cup of coffee. Like nothing's planned, you know, maybe my kitchen's a mess, but come over anyways. And I think there's moments for both and goodness to both. And I think when it is kind of those more like low key laid back moments, there is just like a coziness to it and almost like an intimacy of it as well that entertaining doesn't often have. Recently we were visiting some friends back in Nebraska and staying at their houses. And, a couple of the dinners were literally served on paper plates. And I just found that funny. Cause I'm like, wait, I don't have paper plates in my house. Like that'd be so easy. Then you wouldn't have to do dishes. And it just felt like such a cozy environment, like sitting on the back patio, eating burgers off paper plates, like no like fluff or stress or need to impress, but we had an incredible night, an incredible dinner, an incredible conversation.
No, and I think it's that attitude has helped me as I shifted from being, you know, this single woman. And then, so all of our children, we adopted. So we struggled with infertility. So I had all these years where I could put on the fancy dinner and I could have right. nice plates and we could do everything so well. But yeah. I had made a point through that of still having friends over for regular weeknight dinners or people pop by being like, hey, just join us and keeping it simple and having that attitude and knowing that what mattered was my attention and being welcoming made it so much easier to shift into less when we had children and there was no way I could put together a fancy dinner party other people's children. Because when you're feeding three families and they might have 18 kids between you,
yeah,
your kids are awesome. You're like, here's the paper plates for the kids. Go out in the yard and eat. And I think keeping that shift for as life changes and you move through different seasons, mm-hmm. when you know that the heart of hospitality is about loving and welcoming people into your mess and with all of their mess, it makes it so much easier to just and be like, yeah, we're having pizza on paper plates tonight. Welcome to our house. We're glad to be here.
I love that. Totally. I know hospitality for a lot of people can feel vulnerable too. I read this book. I think it's called like the Christian Art of Hospitality or something like that. It's a really short book. I'll have to link it in the show notes. But one of the things it was saying in there is that in today's culture, we're not used to welcoming people into our homes. Like that's too vulnerable. Like we try and meet at a bar for drinks or at a restaurant for dinner or at a park for the play day, but like don't welcome people into our homes because that's like too intimate, too vulnerable. And I think that there's just kind of like a fear of judgment, of maybe my house not being good enough or comparison. If you know someone else's home, you know, you have struggle with comparison with their home or their family. So how, like, what would you say to speak into that? And has there been a moment in your own journey where you felt stretched in some way and had to kind of lean into that vulnerability?
Well, I'll answer the second part first. I always feel stretched. I'm so busy. And so often before people are coming over, I'm like, well, what was I thinking? Why did they invite these people over? Not all the time, but sometimes I'm just like, oh my gosh, I have so much to do. The kids are being crazy. Why are like somebody's not potty trained? How am I going to deal with this? And then the people come and it's great. And all the rest of the stuff doesn't matter. And I'm like, okay, this is why we make the time to do it, because there's conversation and there's friendship and there's a chance to love somebody. Anything good in life is going to be hard. Like anything worth having in life is going to require hard work and vulnerability and risking screwing something up and embarrassing yourself. Like you don't get anything good in life without that.
As we step into the Christmas season, it's so easy to get caught up in the noise, the shopping, the parties, travel, the presents. But this season is about something so much greater, the birth of our Savior, Jesus Christ. We can either let the busyness take over, or we can slow down, be still, and focus on what really matters.
This is what Hallow's Pray 25 Be Still Challenge is all about, creating space each day to find peace in God's presence. The lineup for this year's challenge is incredible. Jonathan Rumi, Chris Pratt, Sister Marian James, Gwen Stefani, and more all helping guide us in prayer. Together, they're going to walk us through the Nativity story, not as a quiet night, but as a story of real uncertainty, struggle, and divine peace. We'll also journey through two powerful books, The Read of God and The Ruthless Elimination of Hurry. Families can join in too with the Kids Advent Prayer Challenge, Finding Fiat, which is a way to bring everybody together in prayer this season. Plus, Hallow has thousands of prayers, meditations, and even new Christmas music from Matt Maher, Lauren Daigle, and others, all designed to help you connect with God. Experience the stillness and peace that only He can bring this Christmas, and download Hallow for 3 months free at hallow.com/Mari. West Coast Catholic is doing Christmas good this year, you guys. The West Coast Catholic Christmas Market has officially launched. It is your one-stop shop for a beautifully, unmistakably Catholic Christmas. This is a project we've been working on for a while. It's got so many products in this Christmas market, and I'm so excited to invite you to fill your home with pieces that draw your heart to Christ and reflect the beauty of our faith and the true meaning of Christmas. Inside the Christmas market, you're gonna find Christmas ornaments to adorn your tree with sacred meaning, double-sided Catholic-designed gift wrap that are like premium quality level gift wrap, for presents that you're going to give with love under the tree. You're going to find our modern Advent wreath stand with Advent candles that are made out of 100% beeswax. And fun fact, the tallest one has 100-hour burn time. Yeah, it's that good. You also are going to find the Nativity Christmas sweater, which is a cozy, classic, and Christ-centered Christmas sweater with the Nativity scene on it. It is so cute. You're going to wear it to all your Christmas parties this year. Framed winter art to bring peace and reverence and a Christmas spirit to your walls. There is a Saint Nick one, and then there is a baby Jesus in the manger one. Beautifully illustrated Christmas cards that you can send to friends and family, and a fun new nativity mug. It is the coziest looking mug with a fun Christmas sweatery design to it, and I know this one's going to be a fave. Plus, of course, our beloved nativity set is back this year, as well as our Star Bethlehem Rosary that comes back every Advent and Christmas. And just a reminder, all of these designs are unique to West Coast Catholic. You won't find these anywhere else. I design everything myself, so these aren't products that you can get anywhere else. The collection is limited, and when stock is out, it is out, and it's not coming back this year. So make sure that you don't miss it. Go shop now at westcoastcatholic.co and make this Christmas one that truly reflects the celebration of the newborn King.
And I think that's what's particularly true of hospitality. So, you know, I grew up, again, in an environment where everybody was coming over all the time. Everybody knew each other's messes. No one thought about the baseboards. There was no Instagram, so nobody even knew what a tablescape was. You know, like, you had to be buying Martha Stewart to know that. And such deep friendships form, because that's where the real friendships are made. Mess, when you're exhausted, when you're tired. Seeing the real you in your home, not you in a fancy restaurant without a babysitter, not you when you're on your best behavior, but just say, yeah, this is our weeknight and it's insane, but I want you to join us. Now my mom is only 76, but she has Alzheimer's disease and it's pretty far advanced, and she's in a memory care unit. And you know who the people are showing up? Not the friends that they went out to restaurants with occasionally, work acquaintances. Not the other parents from the sports that we participated in. It's those friends who are over at our house, you know, in the messy dinners, on the back porch, eating pizza on paper plates. They're showing up for my mom in the memory care unit, and they're talking to her, even when she doesn't remember that they've been there, even when she doesn't recognize them.
Yeah.
And when we look forward, you know, 30, 40, 50 years down the road at where we're going to be, if we want that kind of thick community that shows up for you in the hospital, in the memory care unit, then we have to take steps now to let people into where it's intimate, into where it's vulnerable. And yeah, do the work. Like, it is hard work. It's easier to sit at home and watch Netflix. It's easier to just meet up at a bar and have a drink, you know, than to cook a dinner for someone. But like, that's not how you get a life well lived. That's not how you get the kind of community that walks with you and disciples your children, because we all need other adults in our lives, other Catholic adults who are not related to, discipling our children, showing them different ways of living the Christian life. So yeah, it's super hard and it's super vulnerable. And a lot of people say they want community, but when it comes to it, it's easier to watch Netflix. And so we have to think about what we really want over the long haul. And if we want to do the work, and if we do, then we do it.
Absolutely. That is gold right there. I have so many people who have asked me on Instagram or see from the outside, like these different Bible studies or marriage groups or friend groups that we have in our community here. And they're like, wow, like, that's so amazing you have that. I wish I had that. Like, how do I have that? And it's funny because, I mean, we've been here 3 years at this point, and we feel like this third year, we're like really finally feeling like we're building that community and those closer friendships. And it didn't just come naturally. It came with us being the one truly doing the work, opening our doors over and over and over again, having people over for dinner, inviting them over for our Bible study, or, you know, to cut cake for someone's birthday, or just anything, like constantly inviting people into our home, which has taken work and time and generosity on many levels. But that is what has cultivated these friendships and these friend groups that we've been able to form over the last few years. So I totally relate to what you're saying. Like, it is always easier to stay home and turn the TV on and to kind of just look around and wish and wonder how other people got it. But the reality is that it takes work.
And it takes failure. You know, like, so we moved to Steubenville. I had lived in Steubenville for a number of years before we got married. We moved to Pittsburgh and we're there for 7 years, moved back to Steubenville almost 2 years ago now. Mm-hmm. And it was a very different Steubenville than when I'd left. Like, most of my friends were gone. Other people had gotten married. There's so many new families in town in Steubenville. It's the Matt Frad effect. Like, he moved here, convinced a million other people to move here, and then he left. So there's all these families.
So
and
funny.
We invited people and invited people, and not everyone you invite is going to become your best friend. Not every person you have over, I mean, most people you have over are not going to invite you back. But you keep doing it, and you keep doing it, and then it starts to click. And so, yeah, we're now in a place where we feel so good about our community, and we've got great friends who live up the street, and it's fantastic. But it took so many dinner invitations, party invitations, for a community to start to form and gel out of that. Mm-hmm. And so it takes persistence, and you might get rejected. People will say no, and
Totally. And I think that's so good to know. And hopefully it's encouraging for people to hear, and the encouragement to keep going and keep inviting people, because you're right. Most people you invite are not going to invite you back. And that can be discouraging sometimes. And you can be like, oh, wow, maybe is there something wrong with us? Like, why is nobody inviting us? And I thought we had a great dinner. But I love what you're saying, like, keep going, being persistent, keep opening your doors. And eventually, like, the Lord's going to bring the right people into your life. That's just going to click, and that community is going to form over time.
Yeah. No, it's, I mean, it, you know, we talk about how we want a village, but villages take time to build. Villages don't come together overnight. And there's a lot of giving and taking that has to go into building that village for it to.
Totally. Now, I'm sure there's women listening that are like, okay, I feel better about hosting. I feel more encouraged. I feel like my house doesn't have to be perfect. I don't have to be Martha Stewart and the chef and everything. But if you had to give, like, maybe some practical tips for how women can prepare their homes or feel like, wow, like, I have, you know, certain tools or certain things in my home that make it just a little bit easier to invite people over or to host, what would those things be?
Think about your guests and who's coming. So if they have lots of little kids, maybe try to remove the breakable things that are going to stress the parents out. Like, maybe this isn't the time to have the China doll, you know, the whatever the Yardo is sitting on your coffee table. So think of that. For us, I have little boys who love Legos, and we have lots of friends with babies. So before people come, we have to do a massive Lego sweep. It's like, all right, baby Wendy's coming, all Legos off the floor. So think about their needs. Like, you don't want to stress them out by having lots of breakable stuff. You don't want a baby to choke on something. You want to make sure there's a place for them to sit. Like, is your couch covered in laundry? Move the laundry. Like, it's closets and bedroom doors are so great because you shut things away.
Stuff in there.
You do not have to have a clean bedroom. Your master bath that no one's going to go into does not have to be immaculate. Like, focus on the rooms where people are going to be. Make them comfortable. Like, again, it's not about impressing, but about loving. And so you want to make them comfortable. They have a place to sit. Are they not going to be stressed so their kids aren't, you know, destroying your house. Do that kind of stuff. Clean the bathroom that they're going to use, especially if you have potty training children. Like, that's always like nice, clean bathroom. If you're going to light a candle, don't light it where the little kids can get at it. You know, again, thinking about your guests. And that's really it. Like, you don't have to have this immaculate house. You have a house that is comfortable. Is there enough places for people to sit? Or, you know, is it a big enough room for people to stand? Or is it safe for the people who are coming over?
Okay.
That's what you should worry about. Not to impress, but to love.
That's great advice. I love that because it really shifts your mindset from thinking inward of like, what is everybody going to think about my space in my home and my cooking, to outward and being like, as the host, it's my job to think about the needs of the people that I'm inviting and loving on them. And I love that mindset shift.
Yeah.
Okay. So screens. I feel like we need to talk about screens a little bit because so often when we gather, we see that in this like culture that's increasingly disconnected, we're often in it distracted, like, you know, someone pulls out their phone and responds to an email or scrolling on Instagram really quick. And there's that temptation to kind of maybe fill gaps of silence with doing something on your phone. So how have you experienced that, like, gathering people in a home or around a table has become maybe a form of like deeper connection and even evangelization?
Yeah, I mean, it's not something I think too much about because normally when people are sitting at a table, looking at each other talking, they're not pulling out the screens. If it's a bunch of us that have gone to a restaurant without kids, someone has got on the table because you want to know if a babysitter is, you know, calling and checking in. But I think like that, the best thing about a dinner party is where you forget about your phone. You forget to check your phone. You forget to even think about it because you're so focused on the other person and what they're saying and you're laughing and you're talking. My husband used to, back when Facebook and Instagram were newer, he would always say, you know, Facebook and Instagram aren't the party, they're the invitation to the party. And so once you're at the party, like, don't confuse, but Facebook exists to connect people. But if you're already in a place where people are connecting and there's communion, you want to log off of the phones.
You don't
feel like you do a full thing on etiquette for guests because hosts need to learn things, but guests need to learn things too. Like, you do not check your social media unless you duck off to go to the bathroom when you're sitting down at a dinner table. You know, if there's a text, you can look at it quickly to make sure it's not
the baby thing.
Like, just responding and texting with a person when you're sitting with a bunch of other people, not the kindest, most polite thing to do. So I think that's probably more of a temptation for people in their 20s than people in their 30s and 40s, just because their 20s have had their phones for most of their lives. And so it's harder to imagine sitting down with a bunch of people and not everybody being on their phones, where if you're like mid-30s, 40s, you grew up without everybody sitting around their phones. And so you kind of know that's the
so true. Yeah, that's so true. When hosting, I have found it to be a beautiful opportunity to evangelize with our home and one with just like the love that we share when we welcome people in and like us personally being a light of Christ to other people, but also just with our home and having beautiful Catholic items around our house that show like we're Catholic. What are your thoughts on that? And like, what does it look like to make a home visibly Catholic without it being intimidating, but in a way that feels inviting, especially for people or guests who might not share the same faith as you?
Yeah. I mean, I'm one of those people who want a crucifix in every room, not necessarily because I feel like I'm going to evangelize people who walk in, but because I need to look at a crucifix throughout the day whenever I'm stressed or anxious or concerned. Like, I need to be able to find Jesus and I need to be able to find a picture of Mary. It just helps me focus my thoughts and remember their love. And so I would, you know, I really would start with that. Like, whereas hosting in some ways is about the people out. Like, when you're building your domestic church, it's for the people inside first and foremost. Like, how am I reminding myself of Christ's love? How am I reminding myself of Mary's intercession? And not just in these, like, and, you know, I wrote a children's Bible that just came out last month. So now we always have the children's Bible laying out, which is fun. But I think it's just, we have pictures of our family, you know, my ancestors, grandmas and grandpas and great grandparents all over the house. And that's part of our family story. But our faith is also part of our family story. And mm-hmm. so it feels like the most natural thing in the world to us to have crucifixes and sacred images and Bibles and sacred hearts and immaculate hearts throughout the house, because that's part of our family story. And I think you should be absolutely comfortable with that when you're welcoming people in, because you welcome them into your home. And your story is told through the pictures on the walls and the books on the shelves and the, you know, knickknacks that you picked up on your travels. Like, the whole house is part of your family story. And so integrating your faith into that story should be as natural as integrating a picture of your grandmother into that story. Like, it's part of who you are. It's part of who you love. And then people get to experience the whole of you. You know, they get to see, oh, there's a picture of you going to England. And wow, that's a really cool icon. Where did that come from? And hey, that's a great book. Like, it's all woven in. And it's not something that you have to be like, hey, look at my sacred art. Aren't I Catholic? You know, that would be a little weird. But hey, this is who I am. And I'm inviting you into my home to encounter who I am. And I really want to encounter who you are. So let's be real with each other. And that's where I would say it flows from.
I love that. I absolutely agree with that as well. And I think in general, in relationships and friendships, faith is something I usually talk about, because that's a natural part of our lives. And I think the same goes for our home. Like you said, if it's just an integral part of your family story, your family culture, you shouldn't second guess whether or not to put up a crucifix or a beautiful image of Mary or a statue. Yeah, that's beautiful advice. Now,
to rush it, I was going to say, so like when I had left the church for a while and was a Protestant. And when I came back, I was like, pictures of Jesus on my wall. And I would go into Catholic homes and there are pictures of every, you know, like all the statues. I was like, this seems a little weird to me. You just start small. It's like, I'm just going to hang a crucifix.
Yeah.
It's like a gateway drug. You hang a crucifix. Next, you know, it's a sacred heart. And then the next thing you know, you've got, you know, this, like, you've got a thoroughfare up there that's like for incense. So just let it evolve organically. Don't feel like you have to rush out and spend $10,000 on, you know, every beautiful piece of sacred art. And
absolutely. Paint.
You know, thingamabob on the internet, just
totally
integrate it naturally into your life.
Yeah. What do you feel like has been one of the most unexpected fruits of welcoming people into your home?
Gosh, I've just made so many dear, dear friends. But I would say here's what's unexpected. But somebody I might invite over doesn't become my best friend, but they become really good friends with someone I've introduced them to. Like, I love that. Like, it's not like Catholic matchmaking. It just, you know, every time you invite somebody over, they're not going to become your best friend, but you're making connections with people and you're helping people build community. And so seeing how sort of the tendrils of hospitality are long, they end up connecting people in ways that you don't expect and you can never envision. Like, it's not your intent. Like, I'm going to invite this person over and then, hey, they're going to become good friends with somebody else. But it's a really beautiful thing to see. And that also makes that kind of thick community where you're connected through all these different intermeshed friendships. And there's just layers of community that form because you were happy to have someone come over and join you for dinner.
I love that. So to wrap up here, for the woman who wants to begin practicing hospitality more intentionally, and she's listening to this episode, she's ready to go, what's one simple, tangible step that maybe she could implement this week?
Gosh, one thing she could do, I would just invite somebody over for something simple. Coffee, a drink, dessert. Like, don't feel like if you've never practiced hospitality before and it terrifies you that you have to have a 6-course sit-down dinner for four different families. Invite one person over to join you for a weeknight dinner with your spouse or by yourself or for coffee. Or a drink. Just keep it really, really simple. And then you can start building from that.
Thank you, Emily. That is so helpful. Where can we find more about you? Where can we find your books? Share that with us.
Yeah. I mean, the best place to go is probably my website, which is emilystimpsonchapman.com. And there you can find my Substack. So I have a Substack that goes out twice weekly. You can find my podcast, Visitation Sessions. You can find all of my books, not all of them, most of them, but definitely all the new ones. So Around the Catholic Tables on my website. And this week, a book is launching called Sacred Wine. And it tells, it looks at 12 different wineries in Italy, France, and Spain. It's a picture book. It's a coffee table book. and shows how the history of Catholicism has been tangled up with the history of winemaking. So super beautiful book just out this week from Marian Press, which also is a great conversation starter. You could have friends over and try different wines from different regions, and everyone can be tasked with bringing a bottle from someplace. So that's always super fun.
I love that. I need that book. That's going on my wish list. I'm so excited about that.
So pretty. It makes you want to like run off to a winery in Europe.
Yeah.
Tomorrow.
Yeah.
So,
I mean, pretty soon after Trey and I got married, a little bit after our first year anniversary, we did a couple weeks in Europe and we went to different wineries and we didn't know what we were doing, but it was just like so fun to try all the different wines and compare France to Italy. So that book just reminds me of that experience.
Yes, that's what it's so. I think, yeah, have a wine party, have every assigned a country to people and have them that's all bring the wine from a different country.
That is such a great idea and so simple and easy. You just buy some cheese, everybody brings some wine, no cooking involved, basically no cleanup. That's so perfect. Okay, well, thanks, Emily, for sharing all your wisdom. And I hope that people are leaving super encouraged. And if you do end up taking anything away from this episode and you're listening, feel free to DM one of us. Or if you host a little party or have people over at your house and just kind of break through that fear, I know Emily would love to hear. I would love to hear about it. And I hope that this was really helpful to everybody. Thanks so much for joining us today, Emily.
Thanks for having me, Mari.
That was such a good conversation with Emily. I know I learned so much from her in this conversation about when to choose to entertain versus when to choose to host, the beauty in both. So I hope that you took a lot away from that as well and that you feel inspired to open your home to your friends and family and start building that community. But now let's jump into Everbee Answers. I am recording from my living room, which if you are in our Kingdom Club, you get to see because y'all have video access, but we have cleaning ladies here today. We just got home from traveling for like 3 weeks. So they're here cleaning the house. We're having a big reset and my podcast studio is a little bit unavailable right now. That's usually upstairs in our loft. So here I am sitting on the edge of my couch, but I didn't want to miss an Everbee Answers. So today's question, somebody asked, do you and Trey tell each other what you want for Christmas or do you surprise each other? And I think we do a little bit of both. So we do tell each other what's on our wish list. Both of us have families on either side that do gifting for everybody. So like everybody does gifting for everybody, or you kind of group up and stuff. But there's like basically 20 people we have to buy gifts for every year. So we have a long gift list. So we do kind of share wish lists with the fam. So people kind of know what's on people's radar. And it doesn't mean you're going to get that, but it kind of gives them inspo. And so we see each other's wish lists, but I feel like usually we usually get each other like two gifts. And one of them usually is something on the wish list because you know that person, you know your spouse like really wants that. And then another one is usually kind of like a surprise gift. And it's not always that way, but I like to kind of go off list sometime and just get him something that I really am excited to get him that I thought of that maybe he would have no idea about. There's just something so fun in surprising someone with a gift. So that's kind of what we do. So that's that. And then the other two questions we're going to answer at the after party. These were asked by our Patreon community. One of them is, what is the hardest part about marriage? And is there something that you wish you knew before marriage? And then the second one is, what are some of your favorite Christmas traditions? Excited to get into these with Trey at the after party. If you want to join in on that, make sure you go to the link in our show notes to sign up for our Kingdom Club. Thank you so much for listening in. If you've enjoyed this episode, please share it with your friends and on social media and give me a 5-star rating on whatever podcast platform you're listening on. That helps me and the show out so much. Also, make sure to follow the podcast on Instagram at Everbee Podcast. And if you want more content like this and you don't already follow me, you can also follow me on Instagram at mari.c.wagner. And may his praise ever be on our lips. God bless.